The Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast is here, and thank you so much for being with us. It's I don't know, the crazy period has kind of slowed down, Bob Laguerre, and now we have a chance to sort of react to some of what we've seen thus far. He's Bob Laguerre. I am Arthur Arkish. Again, it's Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast, and Bob, how's it going today?
Good. I think, so far so good for the Bears. They've made the moves they needed to make. They've increased their weaponry for Mitch Trubisky. It's definitely a couple of steps in the right direction. They addressed arguably their greatest need, but there's still work to be done. It remains to be seen if the Bears are going to enter into that maybe second tier of free agency, or whether they're going to wait for the draft to upgrade their remaining weak points. And there still are a couple of them, but I think they've done what they had to do. They're in much better shape than they were at the end of the 2017 season.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And it's worth noting that Ryan Pace has done some of his best work in the second and third tiers, even later in free agency. So, and I think Aaron Lynch kind of qualifies as that early second wave signing. We'll talk more about him in a minute. But before we get there, before we talk about the latest, the remaining needs to get to in the draft, Bob, what do you think about the Cameron Meredith situation? The Bears maybe rolled the dice a little bit with the original round, or excuse me, with only the right of first refusal tender for the restricted free agent. And now we've confirmed that Cameron Meredith was visiting with the Indianapolis Colts earlier this week. Where do you think this thing goes next?
Yeah, I thought it was a horrible move by the Bears right off the bat, tendering him at the lowest level. He was undrafted, so there's no draft round compensation for the lowest level tender. For an extra $1 million, that they put themselves in a situation where nobody almost is going to make an offer to Cam Meredith and give up a second round draft pick. In this case, it's the Colts, a high second round draft pick. Right. Cameron Meredith is a nice player, but he's coming off a season ending injury. And you know, he's not worth probably the 37th pick in the draft. So for an extra $1 million, the Bears could have locked him up. Then they set the market as far as extending him on a longer-term deal. Now they're allowing the Colts to set the market for Cam Meredith. And, you know, despite the fact that they signed Allen Robinson and Taylor Gabriel and the tight end from Philadelphia, Trey Burton, yep, the Bears still aren't set at wide receiver. Cam Meredith was a guy who was arguably their number one guy going into last year, led the team in receiving in 2016. And the fact that they can't really count on Kevin White means that they need Cam Meredith, or they have to be assured of the fact that Kevin White's going to play 16 games, which, you know, I don't think is possible at this point. So, you know, I think for an extra $1 million, you save yourself a lot of headaches. You know, the Colts are in need of a wide receiver. They lost Dante Moncrief to the Jaguars, and, you know, Cam Meredith is a guy that helped them immediately, makes them better at that position. You know, depending on what their offer is, I think the Bears would, if it's reasonable at all, the Bears would match, but it's possible the Colts could make an offer that the Bears can't afford to match.
Yeah, it's definitely possible because the Colts are sitting on just a huge salary cap allotment and haven't made a lot of moves early in free agency. So we're taping here Wednesday morning, and obviously we're doing this at the risk of news breaking, but we'll see where this situation goes next. You know, the Bears probably figure coming off the knee they'd have a chance to save $1 million, but we'll be interested to see what happens with Cam Meredith. Bob, I think even hours before the first report hit of Cam heading to Indianapolis, we caught wind of Allen Hurns upon being released by the Jaguars, setting up a visit. He confirmed that he has received interest from the Bears. Your thoughts on potentially Hurns versus Cam Meredith, Hurns in addition to Meredith. What do you think about their interest in Hurns potentially joining his former teammate, Allen Robinson?
Good move for the Bears. I think it's almost a wash. Hurns is probably a little more, a little higher value than Cam Meredith is at this point. Yeah. But, you know, the skepticism that maybe Cam Meredith isn't going to be ready for the start of the season, I think is misguided. I think that he'll be there on day one of training camp, and his injury was in August. Okay. By that time he'll have had 11 and a half months to rehab. Still young, and a player definitely whose arrow was pointing up going into last season. So, you can't really make the argument that he's more valuable to Cam Meredith just because he knows the offense, because the offense is changing. But I think it's a guy who you probably want to keep if you can. And if they do lose him, you know, Alan Hearns is fine, but you're talking about a guy, you're going to have to spend a lot more money to get Alan Hearns than you would have if you tendered Cam Ayres at $2.9 million.
Yeah, great point. Alan Hearns, former 1,000-yard wide receiver, but hasn't been able, kind of like Allen Robinson, they both broke out in 2015 and have been a little bit disappointing since. Kind of a more similar player to Cam Meredith, I think, a big guy, an intermediate threat, a slot weapon. That's where I kind of envision Cam fitting into this equation if he's healthy this season and he is back. So still more moves happening, guys, at the wide receiver position. No one is more excited than Mitchell Trubisky, but I know a lot of you guys are excited too, and with good reason. Bob, the other big signing, you know, quote unquote big signing that we didn't get to on last week's podcast happened after we recorded. Aaron Lynch, the former 49ers pass rusher, is reuniting with Vic Fangio. I know that you spoke with him on a conference call and kind of have some info on maybe why Aaron Lynch is motivated to make this work after what was such a promising start to his 49ers career really ended on a down note.
Yeah, 12 and a half sacks in his first 2 years. The first year was the only one he played under Vic, and Aaron Lynch clearly respects Vic Fangio and is fired up about playing for him, and is also fired up about getting his career back on track. The last 2 years, he's been a very low-impact guy, kind of was out of the rotation in San Francisco, didn't contribute much of anything. I think he had only 2.5 sacks in the last 2 years, but he's a guy that's still young enough who can get his career back on track. And one of the knocks on him in the past was that he wasn't necessarily a guy who worked real hard to stay in shape in the offseason and may have come in a little bit out of shape and kind of got lost in the shuffle. But from everything he says, he is really determined to turn it around and to make good for Vic Fangio. He says Fangio is such a great coach and took such an interest in him that he's a guy he would hate to disappoint. So it's definitely a gamble well worth it for the Bears because they didn't pay a lot of money for him, and he's got the chance to be an impact pass rusher, which is something they're definitely missing. They've got Leonard Floyd, and that's about it at this point. So he definitely addresses a need, which I think they're going to go probably address again, if not in free agency, then in the draft, and maybe both areas.
Yeah, and we'll get there in a minute. Just sticking with Aaron Lynch for a second. Great breakdown by Bob. I would just add he's 25 years old. He has 34-inch arms. That's exactly what Ryan Pace and Vic Fangio look for, particularly at that position. If listeners remember him, even dating back to college, he started his career at Notre Dame before transferring to South Florida. And his weight can balloon at times, but when he is motivated, again, he's got a bit of an underachiever label, but when he is motivated, and obviously he was under Vic Fangio, he's been a really pretty dynamic player. As a part-time player, as a rookie, his pass rush production, extremely impressive, and him being able to replicate that this year would certainly be welcomed by the Bears. So Aaron Lynch is interesting. He's one of the two young guys that were coming off a rookie contract at that position that I was interested in, Jeremiah Adetachu from the Chargers being the other one. And actually, I think he signed with the 49ers, if I'm not mistaken. So, yeah, an interesting fit here. The Niners had switched to a 4-3 defense, didn't really suit Lynch as well. So here he is back with Vic, and we'll see what happens. But, Bob, obviously the arrival of Aaron Lynch doesn't change what I think we can both agree on qualifies as the Bears' biggest need now entering these quieter periods of free agency and the draft next month.
Yeah, I think that clearly edge rusher is their priority right now. They've got to add somebody. Leonard Floyd has played well when he's on the field, hasn't been on the field a lot in his 10 games in 2 years. I think he's a guy whose best football is clearly ahead of him, but he can't do it by himself. And you can't really count on Akeem Hicks getting 8 sacks a year. He's been great the last 2 years, but you need another guy on the edge. You're looking at the draft. You're looking at guys like Tremaine Edmonds, Harold Landry, guys like that. Some of these guys, maybe Landry especially, not worth the number 8 pick. Tremaine Edmonds is a project at this point because he's only 19, but is a guy that a lot of people, a lot of mock drafters have going to the Bears at number 8. A lot of mock drafts have him dropping further down than that. So, teams seem like they're always interested in trading down. If that's the guy the Bears have targeted, it's possible they could trade down a spot or two and still get him. But I think right now, by far the greatest need is edge rusher, and I think that's what they're going to address with their first pick.
What do you think about the way that the quarterback landscape seems to be changing on a daily basis? Obviously, the latest being the Jets-Colts trade, but how do you think sort of the dynamic of the top of this draft and it's, you know, being perceived as a pretty strong, I guess it depends who you talk to, Greg Gabriel, our guy doesn't think so, but a lot of people think it's a pretty strong quarterback draft. How do you think that potentially strengthens or worsens the Bears' hand in terms of maybe trading down and trying to better align value and need with the edge rush situation?
Oh, it absolutely benefits the Bears. If I've seen some mock drafts where you could possibly have four quarterbacks going in the top 10, and a lot of them have three going before the Bears pick at number 8, which would guarantee the Bears of an impact position player. You know, if that happens, you're going to have a guy like Quentin Nelson, the guard from Notre Dame, dropping to the Bears, or maybe Minka Fitzpatrick, the cornerback safety from Alabama. So the more quarterbacks go ahead of the Bears, the better it is for them. It really benefits them this year that they're not interested at all in the quarterback market. And I think I got to agree with Greg Gabriel. I think teams are making mistakes by drafting these guys in the top 5 or 6 picks. I think a lot of these guys, if they played at any other position, their value would be somewhere in the second round. But quarterbacks and edge rushers always get pushed way up the draft board. And for the Bears, as far as the quarterback thing, that's a huge benefit for them this year.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And great point by you, not only with quarterback, but edge rush. These are the premium positions. You could throw corner in there too. So while maybe we're not seeing someone like a Harold Landry, someone like a Marcus Davenport being an ideal value if the Bears do stand pat at number 8. And let me be clear, Bob, and I think we're in agreement on this, Ryan Pace would love to have a third-round pick back, the one he gave up to move up for Trubisky last year. So that's got to be sort of in the back of his mind if he finds a deal that works for him for a quarterback-needy team to move up. But again, don't be stunned. Leonard Floyd was a bit of a surprise in that spot too, and you have to pay a premium for pass rush. So I'm kind of teasing here. I did my first mock draft. You can get it in the Pro Football Weekly draft newsletter. You can sign up for it for free on our website. And I guess I'm kind of teasing a little bit what the direction I went in with the Bears' first pick. So, Bob, just a couple minutes left on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. He's Bob Laguerre. I'm Arthur Arkish. Check us out both on Twitter, and make sure you're checking out all our work at profootballweekly.com/Bears. What do you think? What other needs remain after the free agent frenzy outside of pass rush, and how do you think the Bears could look to try and resolve some of those?
You know what? I think they still need help on the D-line. They lost Mitch Unrein, who was an underappreciated, underrated guy who played, I believe, over 50% of the snaps last year. And clearly not a big sack guy, not great as a pass rusher, but a solid guy who you could count on. He was a John Fox guy, was with him in Denver, came here to Chicago and played well. A solid rotation guy. Without him, Bullard is the guy, the third-round pick from 2016 that the Bears are going to be counting on. And Jonathan Bullard has flashed in the past, but never really done it on a consistent basis. And you kind of got to wonder if he couldn't beat out and take playing time from a journeyman like Mitch Unrein, even though he's a solid player. You got to wonder if this is the year he's going to take the step, because if not, if he's not a guy who can play major snaps and at least 50% of the time, then the Bears definitely have to be looking at D-line help for Eddie Goldman and Akeem Hicks, because they can't do it alone.
Yeah, I think so too. And it's interesting, Bob, because in a lot of ways they kind of feel like the Bullard is sort of the antithesis of Mitch Unrein. You don't see a lot of flashes from Unrein. You just get that steady kind of blue collar, bring your lunch pail to work every day type of performance. And with Bullard, maybe the Bears would love a little bit more steady play, a little more stout play. Not that they won't take the flashes that sometimes he provides, but interesting how those two guys kind of juxtapose each other and what the Bears would be looking for. We should add that Roy Robertson-Harris, we believe, is a guy the Bears remain excited about and seemingly will have an opportunity to get an expanded role following Mitch Unrein's departure. Bob, what else? We got D-line. Obviously, we talked pass rush. Your thoughts on the protection? Everywhere on offense seemingly has been addressed except for the offensive line. Where do you think the Bears are at from a need standpoint there?
Yeah, I think they're okay at tackle. They're not great with Charles Leno and Bobby Massey, but I think they absolutely need another interior guy. Cody Whitehair is solid. Kyle Long, by all indications, will be healthy for the start of training camp, but does have a little bit of a checkered past there as far as the injury thing. Eric Cush, a valuable backup who missed all of last season with a hamstring injury, should be back and I think is a valuable guy. I don't know that you want him starting as much as you want him for insurance as a swing guard. I think that would be probably their biggest need on offense at this point, is the interior offensive line. Although a lot of people, are not very high on Charles Leno. The Bears clearly are because they made him, they extended him last year for fairly serious money. I think Bobby Massey has a year left on his deal. And that's a guy maybe you're looking to upgrade most of the time, but I don't know that you're going to use an early round draft pick there when you're okay at that position. You're not great, but I think you can win with Bobby Massey.
It's a solid draft to find guard. So if the Bears don't think that someone like Eric Cush or Hronas Grisou, who I love Hronas, but he hasn't shown anything on the field to suggest he's ready for an elevated role. But it is interesting to see this sort of some form of an Oregon offense coming in, and Mark Helfrich, who obviously knows Grisou well. But if the Bears don't think that they have an in-house replacement for Josh Sitton, and with Kyle Long's health still a big question mark, it would seem to be a good draft to find potential reinforcements along the interior of the offensive line. And then just lastly, Bob, any surprise position? I mean, I think quarterback we can safely remove from the equation with Chase Daniel coming in on a nice backup deal, and then Tyler Bray coming in as well, and he has experience under Matt Nagy. But what other position is there? Is it running back? Is it safety? Is there somewhere else where the Bears could potentially spend a valuable pick that maybe others would be surprised and it wouldn't completely stun you?
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me for the Bears to draft a cornerback or a safety at number 8 if if Micah Fitzpatrick drops or if Denzel Ward from Ohio State drops. Not a tremendous area of need, but, you know, as we've seen in the NFL, you need at least 3 starting caliber cornerbacks. I think the key for the Bears is if they think that one of the good edge rushers is going to fall into the second round where they can get him at the top of that round, I think then maybe they draft top-notch corner safety falls to number 8. They take a cornerback or a safety there and try to get their edge rusher at the top of round 2. LSU's Arden Key is a guy who might be there early in round 2 because he's got some character concerns. Very productive player on the field, but he's got to be checked out, and you've got to make sure you're getting the guy who he was in 2016 when he was dominant last year, played very poorly, by comparison, had a mediocre year, and the concern was that he was saving himself for the draft. He was playing not to get hurt. If the guy comes in and he is what he was in 2016, and if you can get that guy at the top of round 2, that's a great pick. That allows the Bears to address the defensive backfield with their first pick. And I think, like we said, if so many quarterbacks go in the top 5 picks, there's going to be a great player dropping to them at number 8.
Yeah, that'd be a best case scenario for the Bears. A couple, potential premium round DB names to throw in there as well. Obviously, Denzel Ward of Ohio State and Derwin James, the big safety from Florida State. And then a couple of day 2 edge rushers. It would have to be the top of the second round, but other names to file away. In addition to Arden Key, I would add the, and now of course I'm going to draw a blank on his name. It's the dude from Kansas. It's Doran Armstrong, I believe is his name, a big edge rusher who has the athleticism Ryan Pace looks for. And then also Leonard Floyd's former Georgia Bulldogs teammate Lorenzo Carter could be in kind of the plans for the Bears if they do a pass on edge rush in the first round. So all kinds of great information here from Bob LeGarrette. Bob, we really appreciate it. I hope you guys are all checking out Bob's work at ProFootballWeekly.com. He is really starting to get into his groove for us, which we're thrilled about. And it's fun times, guys. We'll be back talking next week on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. Bob, thanks again. Look forward to doing this again soon.
Okay, my pleasure. I'll talk to you later.
If you're looking for a website to keep you up to date on all the latest news, scoops, and rumors from around the NFL, look no further than ProFootballWeekly.com. It's the place for all the best news around the league. You'll find breaking news, hard-hitting columns, video, photos, podcasts, and more. All 32 teams, 24/7, 365 days a year. While you're at it, catch up with all things NFL in our newsletter. Our NFL Daily Update will send you all of the news you need to keep up with the pace of the NFL. You'll get news, analysis, and more sent right to your inbox at noon, Monday through Friday. Sign up now to start getting NFL news during the week. Pro Football Weekly, bringing the best coverage in the NFL to its readers since 1967. Are you following us on social media? Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Pro Football Weekly. Then head over to Twitter and follow PF Weekly and never miss an NFL update. There are plenty of ways for you to enjoy Pro Football Weekly, whether in print or online. If news breaks in the NFL, don't miss a thing and keep it at profootballweekly.com.
It's my pleasure now to welcome in Hub Arkus. She is the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly. You knew that, too. He's also can be heard pretty much everywhere talking Bears, including on this podcast. Hub, what's shaking?
Nothing much, Arthur. How you doing?
Everything's going well on this end. So, you know, some of the excitement has died down just a little bit relative to what was a crazy week to start free agency for the Bears. Accomplished a lot of their goals, I believe, but now that the dust is settling a little bit, I thought we'd take a minute and kind of look at some of the replacement plans, because it wasn't all about additions. There were a couple valuable guys that left, and also want to talk a little bit about Kyle Long. So maybe we start there, actually, with Kyle Long. How do you feel like this offseason has kind of changed, I don't want to say changed his role, but sort of changed the dynamic with Kyle Long after coming off of two, you know, pretty disappointing seasons in terms of injuries, and now his partner in crime, Josh Sitton, out of the equation?
Well, it's really interesting because if you think about it, he is very much kind of the focus of the Bears offensive line right now, and you just don't even know if you can count on his health. He is an exceptional football player, a perennial Pro Bowler when healthy, but hasn't been for some time, and apparently the Bears are convinced that he will be this year, because letting Josh Sitton move, seeming uncertain as to whether center or guard is Cody Whitehair's best position. I think Bobby Massey is more serviceable at right tackle than he gets credit for. It's funny, people talk about the tackles, they assume Massey is the problem, but talking to people who really get the position, like Big Cat Williams, who went to a Pro Bowl playing it for the Bears, or Owen Kreutz, they'll tell you Massey actually has been fairly good. You know, he certainly is not the problem. The problem is Charles Lemmel over on the other side. He may have gotten a contract extension, but he is a below-average left tackle at best. And, you know, this is an area the Bears certainly can address in the draft. You can look at it in second waves of free agency, but they've done nothing but get weaker there so far. And so, you know, if Kyle Long can be healthy, if Kyle Long can be the player he was 2 years ago, and you have a dominant presence on the interior, you can get away with some of these lesser talents around him. But if he's going to struggle, if he's going to miss time again, then for all the weapons the Bears have added, they could end up with a huge problem up front, and the offense could still struggle.
How big of an if do you think that is, though, Hub? We haven't seen the dominant Kyle Long in a while. Now he'll be asked to switch schemes again. It's just been a lot of change, whether it be position, scheme, injuries, and recovery from them. Do you think, I believe Kyle Long is, what, 29 now? Do you think we'll see his best form again? Is it fair to ask that question?
Yeah, I could be wrong about this, and please forgive me, Kyle, if I'm aging you too quickly, but I think he's going to turn 30.
I'm checking right now. I think you're right. He's the oldest guy on the Bears now. I know that. So, before Chase Daniels signed, he would have been. I'm guessing Chase is older. Kyle's 29. He'll be 30 in December, Hub.
Okay, so at the end of the year, but at least I had the right year. Bottom line, listen, he had less wear and tear on his body coming out of school because he didn't play much football in college, but he's taken a beating the last couple of years. And, you know, for me to make a guess, A, I'm not a doctor, and B, even if I were, I'm not familiar with the exact procedures he's had done or where he's at in his rehab. Actually, ironically, I had some pretty major neck surgery shortly after he did, but I know what mine was. I don't know what they did to his neck. So Certainly, the belief is that these are procedures that he can rehab and injuries he can come back from, or the Bears wouldn't continue to be as committed as they are.
Right.
But where he's at in the process, I'd only be guessing. I do know, though, it was interesting. I visited with, I mentioned Olin and Big Cat. They're my partners when we do post game for Bears games at the Score. And we were talking about this last week, and Olin was marveling at even last year when he was on the field playing as hurt as he was. When he's out there, he does things that most guys can't do. Kyle Long is a freak of an athlete for a man his size. He has incredible natural strength. And so if the injuries are healed, there's no reason to believe that he can't be an all-pro offensive lineman again. Now, you still don't know what his best position is, whether it's right guard, left tackle. I felt all along from the day he got here, maybe he should have been a left tackle. I think that ship has sailed. I think at this point he's going to be playing guard. It's just a question on which side. But I think it is reasonable to assume that he can be that outstanding player again and have a few years left to do it. But first he's got to prove, you know, the real question, Arthur, I guess, isn't even the rehab so much, is obviously the first ankle surgery didn't take well because he continued to have so much trouble with it afterwards. Now, I don't know if that's been cleaned up. I don't know if it just needed more time, but if the surgical procedures have been successful, then there is every reason to believe that he can be a great player for the Bears again, because he's unusually gifted and he's just got to be able to get healthy.
Hub, Kyle was introspective earlier in the offseason on social media, sharing what he was going to be going through this offseason in regard to surgeries. He got the neck one done. He did mention two others. I would assume hand and shoulder would be my guess, because he had the ankle last year. But we'll just have to wait and see. I think scheme-wise, you know, you got Mark Helfrich coming in, obviously, you know, some variation of a spread offense getting installed here. That should be a great fit for Kyle Long. It's all about health for him, and another offseason of change. Hub, I think this is a decent segue. Kyle Long was joined by Kyle Fuller as the second former first-rounder under Phil Emery to receive a contract extension from Ryan Pace. I believe this is a Brad Biggs nugget, but I want to say he's only the third first rounder overall, third or fourth by the Bears over the past long time to get a second contract with the club. And I'll have to go back and check on that while you're responding here. I don't want to screw up Biggs's stat, but tell the listeners.
Let me save you some time, Arthur.
Yeah,
I'll save you some time.
Please.
He's the second first rounder since 2005 to sign a second contract with
the
Bears.
You.
Only the fourth first rounder since 2001, meaning this century. Okay, it's you've got Tommy Harris. I know got a second contract with the Bears, and actually Rex Grossman signed a second contract with the Bears, and they're the only four since 2001.
All right. Well, thank you for that, and that could be a whole separate podcast on how to not try and build a sustainable winner. Obviously, that's a formula that Ryan Pace needs to avoid if he's going to have a long and successful tenure here. But the segue kind of holds true. True. We go from Kyle Long to Kyle Fuller. Your thoughts on the way the Bears played their transition tag hand? Packers come in, try and, you know, they put an offer in on Fuller. The Bears quickly match it. I'm still not sure if we have total clarity on the specifics of this contract, but tell the listeners where you're at on how this process unfolded and having Kyle Fuller back for at least a couple more years. He signed a 4-year deal.
Yeah, real quickly, because I do think that's the story of the week. Just going back to Kyle Long one more time, Arthur.
Yeah.
I know you said you assume the second and third surgeries might be the hand and the shoulder. It's got to be the shoulder, because clearly some type of compensation for that may have made the neck issue worse as well. But I don't know if the third one is going to be the hand, or they may be going back in to clean up that ankle, because he clearly did have trouble with it. And again,
right.
This is one that we'll keep an eye on, and we'll let our listeners know when we can. You know, as far as the Kyle Fuller deal, it's ironic. I was on the radio, actually in Milwaukee, on the Packers radio network the other day, and they wanted some analysis they're trying to spin it now that the Packers only did that to damage the Bears' salary cap, and that they knew that the Bears were going to match the offer, but maybe force them to overpay. Well, if that's what they did a lousy job, because Kyle Fuller got a very fair contract. And so I think that this is exactly what the Bears hoped would happen. They played a season with Alshon Jeffrey under the franchise tag and then lost him anyway. They knew, and this is why they used the transition tag instead of the franchise tag, they ran the same risk if they put Fuller out there. You know, when these guys decide that they want the long-term deal and they want the security and they don't get it, they can tell themselves all they want that they're completely focused and playing well and in a contract year. But the players playing under the franchise tag historically don't have their best seasons. And so the Bears took a different route. They knew they wanted to keep Fuller, but they wanted to let somebody else set the market so they didn't overpay. And the Packers did that for him. Now, Kyle Fuller got a lot of money. As near as I can tell, it's about $29 million guaranteed, which is a fair amount less than Tremaine Johnson got, but still one of the five best cornerback contracts in the NFL in terms of the guaranteed money. And that's what you want when you're a franchise player. If you know Kyle at all, he's not the kind of guy who's worried about breaking the bank or needing to get the most money or being flamboyant or out front with it. So it feels like a real good deal for both sides. The $29 million guaranteed, I know we all just think about these numbers when we hear them and say, well, you know, we couldn't imagine that, and why would a guy complain? As I said, it makes him one of the five highest paid cornerbacks in the NFL. That's pretty, you know, rare air for a guy who hasn't been to a Pro Bowl, who's really had one great season. The flip side of it is the Bears couldn't afford to lose him. And so, in essence, it's almost like another one of these two-year deals where he's getting paid, you know, basically like one of those guys. If he plays out the four-year deal, then it's a huge win for the Chicago Bears. And knowing Kyle a little bit, I don't really know him well, but I guess I know him as well as any media, only because I got to spend some private time with him at a couple points during his career. I think if he's healthy, he's the kind of guy who will continue to play well under that deal. This isn't about the money. And let's not forget, even though we talk about the guarantee, if he plays the next 4 years for the Chicago Bears, he's going to make somewhere in the vicinity of $50 to $56 million. And so I think it was a real good deal for the Bears, real good deal for Kyle Fuller. And all the Packers did was help out. I don't think there was any, you know, CIA-type operator's plan to try and screw the Bears in some way by giving them the offer sheet. They hoped to get him. It didn't happen.
And I have to kind of chuckle because anyone who asked that on a Packers radio station, whether they were just trying to drive up the price, clearly hasn't seen the Packers cornerback crew, because that's their biggest concern. And I think where a lot of people are focused for them early in the draft, finding someone to pair with Kevin King. Obviously, they traded away Demaryius Randall, and that's been a major issue for the Packers in recent years. We may take a spin across the NFC North here real quick with Hub Arkish in our last few minutes. But first, Hub, just is there one or two guys who you were bummed to see go, or you think the Bears have an actual, I don't want to say concern, but definitely have a corresponding move to make sure that they properly replace someone, maybe like a Christian Jones or a Mitch Unrein?
Well, I think those are the two biggest losses, obviously. And they re-signed Kyle Fuller, that I thought was essential. Prince Amukamara as well. I think Sam Acho back on more than a one-year deal is smart at this point. Again, he didn't break the bank. You know, Mitch Unrein is certainly not a guy that you can't win without, but he was a really good, really solid football player, and he was your starting five technique across from Akeem Hicks. Now, Jonathan Bullard got better week to week last year. He is obviously the heir apparent at that position. Roy Robertson Harris continues to be somebody who's very interesting. You know, basically, it was the one area where the Bears had absolutely no need. I don't think this creates a huge need, but my guess is that they'll be drafting a five technique somewhere in the middle to late rounds as well. You know, I think Christian Jones is a big loss. I think that, you know, the fact that he played inside and outside equally well, I think he probably even had some pass rush ability that they never unearthed, and he just didn't get that much money from Detroit that I'm disappointed to see him go. Now, there are reasons for everything, okay? And the fact is that Christian Jones was here 3 years before he became a factor. He also was an undrafted free agent out of Florida State with second or third round talent. There was an off-the-field issue or two, but the bigger concern was just about his ability to play in a system, to grasp a system, to learn. I'm not saying he's dumb, none of that, but I mean, there were concerns about how focused he would be, and it did take him quite a while to become productive in the Bears system. So I'm sure all of that goes into the thinking when you make these decisions. But he was actually, I didn't realize this until I went to write about it last week. He was the Bears' leading tackler last year. He was their number one defender. under. Some of that was health, but the guy was a real valuable piece. So if there is a huge loss or a big loss, I won't call it huge, but if there's a big loss in free agency, it is Christian Jones. And I keep reading people writing that the Bears have a big need now at inside linebacker. Your two starters are Danny Trevathan and Nick Kwiatkowski. You could be really good there if Kwiatkowski takes a little bit extra step forward and Trevathan can stay healthy. The bigger need is at outside linebacker, where Leonard Floyd, it doesn't look like a guy who can stay healthy after playing, 12 and 10 games in two seasons. And as much as I like Sam Acho, he's always been the third outside guy. McPhee and Young are gone. So you have a huge need at the linebacker position. You need help both inside and outside, but at least on the inside, it's more depth. I think you need another starter on the outside. So that clearly is the Bears' greatest area of need now coming out of free agency.
He's Hub Arkish. I'm Arthur Arkish. It's the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. You can find us on iTunes. We'd love it if you did. Leave us a rating and a review after you have subscribed. And we appreciate you being with us today. Just a couple more minutes chatting with Hub. And good breakdown of kind of where the Bears sit. What about their rivals? I think just in terms of these hopefully pretty good segues, let's go straight to Detroit, Hub. And I don't know. I really like Christian Jones, the player, and I really like Matt Patricia, the defensive mind. And I'm pretty excited to see what he has in store for Christian Jones, presumably flanking him around Jared Davis and their other new linebacker, Devin Kennard, in some form or fashion. They've signed LeGarrette Blount to try and bolster that backfield, the worst run game in football last year. Reports as we're taping here that they are also signing Ricky Jean-Francois. Played for the Patriots under Patricia, played for the Packers and San Francisco 49ers as well. Just your very quick thoughts on the Lions and what they've done to improve.
Well, it's interesting. Thomas Dimitroff and Scott Pioli have done an outstanding job in Atlanta off the Bill Belichick front office tree. John Robinson appears to be doing a great job in Tennessee. Bob Quinn, we know a little less about, and that's not a negative. It's just that he hasn't done that much one way or the other so far. He was wise to tie up Matt Stafford, who is a franchise quarterback, but I would have thought the Lions would have been more active. They do have some salary cap issues, interestingly enough. They're not an outstanding football team, but they got a fair amount invested in their first two receivers. Obviously, Stafford, the second highest paid quarterback in the league, spent a ton on TJ Lang and Ricky Wagner last year, and they did have to franchise Ziggy Ansah, and so that group probably creates some cap issues, and they couldn't be overly aggressive in free agency. But this is a team with a huge need at running back, still needs to get better on the interior of the offensive line. They released Eric Ebron. They're mediocre at best at tight end. Then you go over to the defense. They're good in the secondary, but they really needed help at linebacker. They addressed that. And I think they need more help up front than Ricky Jean-Francois, who's trying to play for every team in the NFL at some point, So I don't know that the Lions are better, We tend to forget they were, a playoff contender last year. They were second ahead of the Packers, not third. But they're not a team that scares you in many ways. And LeGarrette Blount's a nice signing, and you can understand his history with the Patriots when Patricia was there.
Right.
But that doesn't fix the running game. So right. I think they still got work to do.
Fun stat, I believe LeGarrette Blount has 10 100-yard rushing games in the regular season and playoffs combined since the Lions last had a 100-yard rusher in a game. I always I love that stat. 2013 and Reggie Bush, an amazing stretch of futility under Jim Caldwell there, and even preceding Caldwell, actually. So, Hub, a couple more minutes. We gotta do this kind of quick, but what about the Minnesota – well, forget that. Vikings are on top. We'll go to them last. The Green Bay Packers, you mentioned their offer sheet for Kyle Fuller, but what about Mo Wilkerson? What about Jimmy Graham? How much better do you think the Packers are?
Packers have been trying to get a difference maker at tight end for as long as we can remember.
Since Michael Finley.
Yep. Had the bad neck injury. And,
right.
You would think Jimmy Graham could be that guy. I'm underwhelmed. I know he had 10 touchdowns last year, but he also only had, I want to say it was 57 catches for about 500-600 yards. And that was with Russell Wilson throwing to him. Jordy Nelson had the exact same numbers, but only 6 touchdowns with Brett Hundley throwing to him. So, in essence, what they did cap-wise was they released Nelson. They added Graham, and I don't know that that's going to be a big win for him. It changes the positions. I understand that they think Devontae Adams is their number one now, and Randall Cobb is still there, and they've got a couple other youngsters, and they'll bring in a few more. But I know people are raving about, oh, now they got Jimmy Graham. Look out for Aaron Rodgers. We'll see. I'm not so sure that production overall, that they've made a big difference by losing Nelson and adding Graham. Jordy coming off the ACL had a huge year, and then to say the year after that he suddenly lost it. I don't know if he suddenly lost it. He probably did lose a quarter of a step, but was that more about the Rodgers injury? We'll see. I do think Muhammad Wilkerson could prove to be one of, if not the best signings in this free agency class. This is a guy who was the best five technique in football in 13, 14, maybe even in 12, 15. And then in 15, he has a Pro Bowl year, and he gets the huge contract, and then he disappears in 16 and 17. If this guy gets back to who he was on this one-year prove-it deal with the Packers, that fixes something they've been looking for quite some time. And Mike Daniels still has the ability on the other side. I mean, this could be a dominant pair of bookend five techniques that could make that front really effective. The question is, will he be motivated by this one-year deal? Does he still have what he had a few years ago? I think physically he probably does. He's not old. So that looks to me like a great signing. I don't understand why they were seemingly determined to let Morgan Burnett get away. This is a guy who just a couple of years ago was a Pro Bowl safety, was still probably the most dependable player in that secondary. You're trying to fix the cornerback position as well. I know they like Josh Jones probably at the other safety, but for what Burnett got from the Steelers, I'm not sure why they wouldn't keep him around. But this is Gutekunst's first year. He's going to change some things. He's going to do some things in his own image. Just adding these free agents is part of that. So I don't think the Packers have had a bad offseason, but I think interesting in the decision. I understand the Jordy Nelson decision. I'm not sure I understand the Morgan Burnett decision quite as much.
Yeah, the Packers' loss will certainly be the Steelers' gain, and maybe a little concerned about how much tread Morgan Burnett has left on the tires. But I'm with you. I love the football player. I also do like some of the young guys they have, both in Josh Jones and Kentrell Bryce. So it'll be fun to see how that rotation works without Morgan Burnett, who's been their leader, who's been their brains of the operation on the field for the last handful of years. Lastly, Hub, and I believe I asked you about Kirk Cousins already. You had an astute point last week about how you're not sure if they necessarily get better, and it's more Minnesota betting that Case Keenum can't replicate his breakthrough and kind of betting on Kirk Cousins' consistency. So that makes a ton of sense. I don't want to rehash that, but what about Sheldon Richardson? Because we haven't talked about him. That'll be kind of on the way out. Just your thoughts on Richardson, and we'll wrap up here with Hub Arkish on the PFW Chicago podcast.
Well, I mean, the only difference between Sheldon Richardson and Muhammad Wilkerson is that Richardson's kind of a bad actor off the field. He brings some baggage. You got to worry about the guy now. He's going into a really stable situation. I think if anybody can handle him, it's probably Mike Zimmer, plus some of these guys around him. And so hopefully he will mature and grow up. He has been a five technique. He's going to be an anchor tackle in that 40 front. And him next to Linval Joseph between Everson Griffin and Daniel Hunter, my Lord, that's scary. And so that is an outstanding signing. And again, I believe that's another one-year prove-it deal. And if this guy gets motivated, the Vikings are going to be impenetrable. It's a scary move, you know. And they are clearly the front runners in the NFC now. If Dalvin Cook is healthy and I think have a crack on maybe a year or two late at the Super Bowl. Again, you know, it's easy to talk about that in March. We'll see where they're at in August and again by midseason. But at least in terms of preseason projections and looking at that depth chart on both sides of the football, that's a really good football team.
Well, I don't have a horse in this race, but as a former Mizzou guy, I would like to see Sheldon Richardson just put it all together because he was so good early in his career before things kind of went off the rails. So an interesting division to continue to monitor as the offseason continues. Hub, I've already taken too much of your time. I'm going to let you go. That's Hub Arkish on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. Thank you so much for being with us again this week, and let's chat again next week and talk some more Bears.